Good afternoon. Welcome to Government Operations, Veterans Affairs Committee. We have three magnificent bills in front of us today. The first magnificent bill is House File Number 2706 regarding Environmental Advisory Councils. I assume that's why it's here. And where would it go from to the Rules Committee?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe it would go to Rules, and then assuming
you're tardy,
everything.
Right?
Well, yes. The short answer is yes. We're sorry.
It's always when you go to before the rules, just say you screwed up, whatever, and move on.
We'll accept our chastisement.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I'll move the bill to the Rules Committee. Why don't you go ahead and explain why it's here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And it's dangerous to say this, but this is a very simple bill. It's complicated subject matter, but what we're trying to do is fairly simple. The OEA,
I'll be brief.
Well, in this case, I will be. The OEA, the Office of Environmental Assistance, is looking to extend three OEA advisory councils: Prevention, Reduction, and Recycling Advisory Council, Solid Waste Management Advisory Council, and the Environmental Education Advisory Board. That's the short and sweet of what we're trying to do. I have here to testify from the agency, Mr. David Benke. I'll let him testify about the subject matter and give you a little bit more in-depth.
Hi, thanks for coming. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Benke. I'm the Strategic Directions Manager for the Office of Environmental Assistance. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the office, we work in the area of environmental issues, and our main focus is providing incentives through financial, technical types of assistance to both businesses, citizens, local governments, and others to help implement ways of dealing with environmental problems that are non-regulatory. What we're asking for is an extension through June 30th, 2007 of three of our advisory councils. As Representative Hoppe mentioned, our Prevention, Reduction, and Recycling Advisory Council. That's basically dedicated to increasing the levels of pollution prevention, waste reduction, reuse and recycling in the state. Our Solid Waste Management Advisory Council, which is dedicated to increasing the effective and integrated delivery of solid waste management programs throughout the state. Both those advisory committees bring to the OEA an independent outside information source that provides the OEA with the information that we need to make good decisions, both in developing and implementing our programs, but also making sure that they're effective and appropriate for our customers. The Environmental Education Advisory Board serves a wide range of needs of the environmental education community. It offers direction to both state agencies, to environmental education organizations, to policymakers and educators working to achieve the state environmental education goals. The makeup of these councils is inclusive for the reduction in solid waste advisory councils of citizens, local governments, and business. It's a one-third, one-third, one-third dispersal of those folks. It's in increments of three. We begin with membership of at least nine, and not to exceed more than 24 of those. The Environmental Education Advisory Board is a little bit different. It includes appointees from each of the state agencies involved in environmental education, as well as membership from the Board of Teaching, the University of Minnesota Extension, and then citizens throughout each congressional district, including licensed teachers and several at-large citizen members. These advisory councils to us are imperative in getting our work done. We look at the decision-making that we make as a partnership, and we've utilized all three of these advisory councils to that effect. With that, I would ask if there are any questions.
Any questions? Representative Jacobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoppe, as I'm reading through the language of the bill, I noticed that these boards were to expire June 30, 2003. Are they currently operating?
I'll defer that to Mr. Benke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, they are not. We are asking that they be the dates be extended so we can utilize those advisory councils once again.
Thank you, Chair Rhodes. Well, members, if you recall, or if you've forgotten, I had the bill last year that forced all these to sunset. And now they're all creeping back. So my question is, to whom does each of these boards report that are listed in this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, sure. These boards report directly to the Director of the Office of Environmental Assistance in terms of providing input on the decisions that the Office of Environmental Assistance would be making in the areas of our policy development, program implementation. As I mentioned, we provide assistance in terms of financial assistance to our partners. So decisions on grants and loans and things that we would make, we would use these boards to gain that input so that we are, you know, providing the resources out there that are going to actually help get some of the things done that we need to do.
And Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
So the EEA board is 20 members, correct?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, the EEA board is 20 members, that is correct.
And with that variety of representation, can you give me an example of independent thinking that they have done in regard to a decision they've had to make?
Mr. Chairman, there's a couple of examples that come to mind. In terms of the Environmental Education Advisory Board, one of the things that we're trying to do with that is to make sure that we're providing the right types of tools to the educators that are out there. One of the things that we used to do as an agency is deliver services in a way that was more newsletter, bulletin kind of focused. Through the help of the Environmental Advisory Board, it was determined that workshop type of activities where we can provide the tools directly to the educators would be much more used and much more appreciative of the customers. Those workshops now are at over capacity, and that was kind of the help in terms of focusing how our tools would be delivered and our information exchanged as one example from the Environmental Education Advisory Board.
And Mr. Chair, sir, doesn't the University Extension Service provide some of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, one of the things that although the Extension Service does provide some of the actual information outlay in terms of customers, this information is to help kind of coordinate and create more of a joint point where the information can be looked at from a lot of different perspectives. The representation from the state agencies, I think, helps that. It also takes a look at if there are duplicative or, you know, multiple agencies trying to work on the same kinds of issues where joint efforts can be worked out. We've done numerous education activities with the Push Control Agency and the Department of Natural Resources, and some of that's directly related to our connection through the advisory board itself.
One last question,
yes,
Mr. Chair. On the Solid Waste Council and on the Prevention, Reduction, and Recycling Advisory Council, how many members on each? Because I noticed it's 9 and no more than 21. Minimum 9, maximum 21.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, on the Solid Waste Management Advisory Council, the minimum is 9 with no more than 21. On the pollution prevention, it begins at 9 with no more than 24. We try and keep it in balance in terms of the one-third, one-third, one-third distribution, and that's why we're in the multiples of 3, as it were, but not to exceed 24 for the Advisory Council for Prevention and 21 for the solid waste.
Okay. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, kind of interesting. In 1983, then Representative Dan Knuth sunsetted all advisory boards also. So it comes around.
Nothing changes.
But question on the path of this bill.
Yes,
obviously,
sir.
Since these councils are not in place now, it would have to be an expenditure of some kind for some committee to look at as well. How do you envision this going? Miss the deadline, has to go to rules?
Well, Representative Knobloch has the right to hear it in Ways and Means because they don't have a deadline.
Well, we usually hear these sorts of bills in Ways and Means, Mr. Chair, Representative Sola, because they do account for an additional expenditure of money.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my question is this, before it gets to Ways and Means, does it have to go to the environmental policy?
Environmental
or
finance?
Finance. Went to environmental policy, but should it also go to finance?
Chair Knobloch.
Somebody has to count the money.
Yep.
I'm not, you know, is there money in this biennium, Mr. Chair, Representative, is there money in this biennium on this bill?
Representative Hoppe? Sir?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the biennial budget, which was passed last year, included the advisory council expenditures for the OEA, so it wouldn't be additional resources that we would be needing. We did request that the dates be extended last year, and that didn't occur, but the budget, which contained the resources for that, was included. So it wouldn't be new money. We are asking for the ability to utilize and get the input that we need from our stakeholders.
So there's no fiscal notes sitting with the bill?
Right. Well, Mr. Chairman, to that point, if we did not pass this bill, there would be extra money in the agency that we could take away then to help balance the budget. We only got $160 million to go. I'm serious on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so, I mean, it may not be new money, but it's money that would be not expended and would probably also be a part of the Representative Alba counted as part of the cancellations as well.
So yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I would say it probably should go to the Finance Committee.
Okay, we'll change the motion when we get to that point. You're finished? Representative Representative Silbert.
Since it's a policy that has missed the deadline, does it have to go to Rules before it goes to Finance? I don't know. I'm asking. I
get them mixed up myself, but I thought it had to go to Rules and then back to the next committee, but I suspect if it goes to Ways and Means, they're always meeting, so.
But in order for us to even consider it, Mr. Chair, it has to go to Rules.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I mean, you would not want to send it to Ways and Means now. My opinion would be that it would go to Rules since it missed the deadline, and then from there they could decide to send it on its way.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I would agree.
Okay. We'll continue then. The motion will still be the same, but you know you're going to have another stop. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even a more basic question, I think I'm going to see if I can put Mr. Shepard on the spot. It looks to me, in looking at this bill, that this board has already expired. And I'm just and this is a question, I don't know the answer. I'm just wondering, is this amendment, in effect, satisfactory for the purposes of resurrecting it?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Newman, I think that's a very good question. I think in this case, I think it is. I think that the legislative intent is clear here, and I don't think it's necessary to repeal the old statute and reenact something new. I think this will do it.
Anybody in the audience want to speak about this bill for or against? If not, any other discussion? Then I will renew the motion that House File Number 2706 be recommended to pass and go to the Rules Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
All right. It passes. You're on your way.
Thank you.
Representative Severson, we're going to have to jump ahead because they're still trying to negotiate something on the other bill. And Representative Severson, this would be House File 3009. It would also have to go to the Rules Committee.
Yes.
So the recommendation to bring it before us is to pass to the Rules Committee. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for taking the time to hear this bill. Mm-hmm. Actually, kind of my purpose on bringing this bill forward is to hopefully generate some discussion, some awareness of what we currently have in statute and possibly a possible fix, and that will, you know, rest with what comes out of this discussion. A little background on this particular bill. I was at home, received a call from a constituent of mine who is actually a lobbyist as well, and he wanted to ask me about some procedural issues. There was a individual who was a state employee in the executive branch up in Duluth who had been requested to come down and testify at a group hearing or a group convention down in the cities, and testifying on the area of his expertise. He said that the honorarium that he was asking for was $500, And the issue with this was not so much the honorarium as he wasn't sure if there was legitimate, in terms of ethics, to go to bring the gentleman down and actually pay him. The question arose, is that legal? So our staff went to it and began to look into it, and it is, in fact, not a violation. And I would refer to Statute 43A 38, Subsection 2, and it reads, employees in the executive branch in the course of or in the relation to their official business shall not directly or indirectly receive or agree to receive any payment of expense, compensation, gift, reward, gratuity, favor, service, promise for future employment benefits from another source except for the state for any activity related to the duties of the employee unless otherwise provided by law. However, the acceptance of any of the following shall not be violations of this subdivision. And it goes down to honoraria, and it says honoraria are expenses paid for papers, talks, demonstrations, or appearances made by the employee on their own time for which they are not compensated by the state. So the resolution of that was, well, he must, if he takes leave or if he's on his own time, then he can collect an honoraria. Kind of the subtitle to this as well, as he said, if you make arrangements well enough in advance, I can schedule this because I can work it into my schedule. So obviously this is something he did on more than an occasional basis. My first look at this, I'm going, well, wait a minute. He's getting paid an honoraria for an expertise that he has developed that he is currently being employed by the state for. So it's coming from a military background, I think we call it double dipping. That was the first thing that came to mind. Then when this we found this particular reading on it, the concern that was raised on this was, is he in fact on vacation when he does this? The individual that asked me this, his concern was not so much in paying the honoraria, but that they could get into a legal bind in terms of paying the gentleman and then finding out that he was still on state time and that they would be violating a law unconsciously doing that. So I guess my purpose in bringing this forward was, and the fix that I proposed here is probably a little extreme, probably a little hostile, but I wanted to get some feedback from the members in terms of, you know, whether we want to pursue down this avenue or not. And having said that, I would propose that my legislation would replace subparagraph 2, section D, which is the honoraria portion. And I would stand for questions and discussion.
Any questions from members? All right. Representative Jacobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Severson, let me give you a situation, and you can clarify if it would be allowable. Someone who worked for a state agency here in the metropolitan area was asked to come out and discuss his work with a group somewhere in greater Minnesota. Mm-hmm. At that point, is it the expenses of the travel, if it's done during the day, are borne by the state if it's related to the job, or could the group that asked this person to come and testify reimburse the travel expenses? How would some of that work?
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And according to law here, they could be reimbursed for their travel. If the state does not reimburse them for their travel, they can be reimbursed by the individual corporation or company that's asking them to come out.
Okay. Yes. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would like Mr. Shepard's reaction to the phrase for discussing the employee's executive branch work with another person or group. Is for discussing really applicable here? Isn't what Representative Severson suggested, that this employee has presented something in probably, I suppose it could be a formal or informal way, but discussing here, it suggests that he or she could be talking to someone in a group about his employee, and that would violate what's happening. And I don't think we're really talking about discussions, as I might discuss something with Representative Samuelson, but more of a presenting. Can you help me out a little bit? I'm just befuddled. I just don't think we want to use for discussing.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, members, certainly I think Representative Erickson raises a good point, and you could use the term presenting.
Yeah, that's what I was
thinking. I would point out that the Representative Severson's bill applies to receiving a cash payment from a source other than the state. So it wouldn't, if you're discussing something in the course of your work. But as I understood, part of Representative Severson's intent would be if you were being paid by somebody else for discussing what you do at work or the work of your agency, then it was my understanding he did want that to apply fairly broadly to discussions as well as presentations.
Okay, Representative Knobloch, then Slovert.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, if you had and I'm not thinking of anyone when I bring this up, I'm just thinking if you have someone who's a half-time employee with the state and they have an expertise in a particular area and they're asked to go out and speak to a group and they're paid a fee to talk about, I don't know, if they work for the Pollution Control Agency and they're paid a fee to talk about their views of what's happening at the federal level in the development of pollution legislation, would that be something that you'd want to be prohibiting?
Mr. Chair and Representative Knobloch, I think, and that's why I bring it before, I think the intent of this is for an employee of the executive branch who would have the knowledge or the base that basically is a draw to the outside area. I think if we're talking in terms of a federal act, that would probably be beyond the purview of a state employee, and that would fall under different circumstances. And one of the questions, again, was on this, well, what about if they have something other than? This does not preclude if they have a hobby or something that they're an expert in another area, preclude that state employee from receiving honoraria for that particular topic. But as it relates to the job that the employee does for the state, the issue is that the state has employed this individual, has really been the not only the benefactor, but the investment into this individual for the knowledge base, and who are really paying him are the taxpayers of Minnesota. So we're paying twice if we do this honoraria. Basically, we've paid him to accrue this knowledge, and now we're paying him again to come and dispense this knowledge to us. So I think that's kind of the crux that I'm trying to get to in this particular bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, I don't necessarily disagree with your bill. I see where you're coming from, and I certainly applaud the intent of it. I guess I'm just trying to get a little bit better of a sense of how it would work. And I guess, do you have any sense for how common a practice this is in the executive branch?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knobloch, you know I don't, and I think that would probably, if we would choose to lay this one over, would be something that I could definitely dig into. Part of my intent on this, and I appreciate your willingness to grant me this hearing, was to get some feedback from colleagues and say, you know, is this something that we want to pursue, because it could be, and I don't know to what extent it is being abused in our executive branch, but I think it warrants looking into.
Representative Slover?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Severson, you talked about the state to have an investment in the knowledge. The individual might have the investment in the knowledge to begin with to bring to the state. I mean, it may not be the state providing that individual with the knowledge, but the individual may have had an education, a PhD. This would also apply to someone such as the Department of Health, and expertise of going out and talking about the spread of infectious diseases. It might also affect someone in the Department of Agriculture going out and talking about to different farm groups, and they may want to pay an honorarium. And I go back, I'm really offended, I guess, by on 14 to off-duty. You're controlling your own life even if they're on vacation. And I go back to when I was a young man working at a company called Univac. It was bought by Sperry Rand at the time. It's now Unisys. And the CEO of the company had a memo out to all our employees. And he said, I'd rather have somebody come to work tired because they were working a second job trying to get ahead than to have someone come to work tired because they had watched TV all night. And I would relate that back, if a CEO of a major company can have that philosophy, I thought that's saying something. Here's someone who's ambitious enough to want to get ahead and maybe wanted to spend his vacation time not going on vacation, but using his expertise to probably support his family a little bit better. So I'm very, very cautious of this legislation. I don't think that we need to control everyone's life all the 24 hours a day.
Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In a somewhat similar vein, Representative Severson, I wasn't able to follow your reading of the statute to which this refers entirely, but I think it would be correct in saying that there wouldn't be any requirement for a state employee to indulge in this practice on his or her own time by the state, right?
Representative Severson? Well, and in that, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty, yeah, in that light, the request could go through the department for which they work, in which the department would assume the responsibility of either approving or denying that individual's deployment to that individual place, and more than likely would have per diem issues that the department could disperse to the individual to make sure, again, that this individual is representing the department. And his knowledge base is representing the department, which I think is really the intent of that whole process. That in this particular individual from MnDOT up in Duluth was asked to come down, and they were looking to him because he had an area of expertise with that particular government entity, and they were asking him to come down. Now, he could have very well have come down through the approval of MnDOT on his pay purpose, on his normal work day, and dispense that knowledge, and it would have been the taxpayers who paid for that.
But then, Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, in that particular instance, if MnDOT did not approve that, then it simply wouldn't happen, or you would be expecting this person to do this on his own time for no compensation.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, I guess I would address that one and say that they can give the individual the latitude and give the, as it says in statute here, they can give him or give the entity the ability to pay the transportation costs down there, and those can be borne. But I guess I'm just thinking in terms of generating extra income for a knowledge base that we have already employed in the executive branch. And just an issue along that Representative Solberg had mentioned after hours, the fix that they got that brought this forward was really the issue that the company that had asked them, or the entity that had asked him to come down and to speak, didn't want to get into an ethical crunch by having him come, not knowing whether or not he's on work hours, whether or not he's on the hours that are of employment for him. And so it becomes awkward. Then do you say as the entity, well, do you have leave papers? Do you have something that says that this is your vacation time? Or they're kind of sticking their neck out saying, you know, we've asked you to come down here. We are assuming, based on this, you know, that you are taking this time off and you are not on the state's dollar at this point.
Representative Severson, a couple of questions come to my mind. In fact, I think we had a bill like this regarding a certain governor we used to have about what he was doing on his own time, although he said he was a 24/7 guy. If somebody worked for Department of Commerce and they had a chance to give a speaking engagement in Hawaii and all expenses paid and all that, wouldn't it be up to the commissioner to say, no, you can't do that, or yes, you can do that, rather than having us do it legislatively? Have you explored the idea of just the executive order from the governor or the commissioners to say this is what we do and this is what we don't do, rather than doing it in statute? Because then statute seems to go a broad brush. What's your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, I think that's probably a good avenue to go. I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, when we make law, oftentimes we create loopholes, and those loopholes undo the very purpose. And as I was reading through this, you could see that it was, the intent was that there was a compensation that they wanted to exclude, and then all of a sudden we've got five other subdivisions on this thing that now open it up. And so we kind of tend to do an undo law, and my intent on this was just to bring it to some discussion.
That's fine, and that's what we're doing. Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the biggest problem with this bill as it's written, Representative Severson, I think, is that it applies to off-duty hours as well as work hours. You know, if any entity wanted to ask of a department that they send an employee to talk to them about something, you know, I think it's perfectly reasonable to expect that if the department responded affirmatively, that that would be at its expense rather than expecting the employee to be paid. But I don't see it, that it's any of our business what employees do on their own time. It certainly wouldn't apply to anyone else in the private sphere, and I don't see why it should apply to a public employee any more than that. I mean, I think your assumption is that somehow the public employee would not have any expertise or not have any ability to address whatever question is being asked were it not by virtue of their public employment. But I think that's a pretty unsound assumption, as Representative Solberg pointed out. You know, if you come to work in a State Department with a PhD from Harvard, you know, is it reasonable to assume that the only reason that you would be able to address a question anybody asked is because you were a state employee? And that just doesn't, I just don't think this works the way you have it drafted.
Okay, anybody in the audience want to speak for or against this bill? See nobody else? Is there anybody else who'd like to have any questions? I think we're going to lay it over, but you're okay with that?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, the bill will be laid over. And guess what, folks? The other bill on the agenda has to be worked on. It's not ready to go. They have some issues to work out, so that's going to be laid over. And with that, believe it or not, Representative Solberg. Yeah, that's a good question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We meet tomorrow as 12:30, our normal time. We just have a handful of bills tomorrow, right? One or two. The question is going to be, what are we going to be doing on Thursday and Friday, I think. And at this point, there's nothing that would dictate that we should be here on Friday unless a stadium bill would happen to enter into the fray. That will come to us one way or the other way. If it doesn't start here, it's going to be here. We're going to hear it. And then you'll get ready with your community ownership amendment there. But
could that be a delete all?
And I don't know what else is. It depends whatever gets referred out. And so at this point, it's kind of like fizzling. Huh? But we will be. Yeah. At this point, we'll let you know as fast as we know. But at this point, we never say no. We just say not yet that we're meeting on
fluid
Friday.
Fluid again, huh? Fluid. We're back to fluids.
Right, but. Hopefully by tomorrow we'll know, because it's in all fairness, I don't want to let you know on Friday morning that we're not meeting. So
That sounds like the food that Governor Plenty used to have when he was a majority leader.
Right.
I wonder if the stadium bill is also fluid like that.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? If not, we're adjourned. Thank you.